Welcome to the Painting Night. I will be back in a couple of seconds with the rest of the English message. Bienvenue au balado Soirée Peinture. On tient à remercier la BIS, fier commanditaire du podcast. Aujourd'hui, partie 2 de notre entrevue avec Peachy. Encore une fois, énormément chanceux de l'avoir sur le podcast avec nous. On a eu vraiment beaucoup de plaisir. Donc, si vous n'avez pas entendu l'épisode de la semaine dernière, la partie 1 était la semaine passée. On fêtait Noël avec Peachy. Et cette année, on commence 2024. Et oui, en force avec Peachy à nouveau. Donc, sur ce, sans plus attendre, bonne soirée peinture! So, this week, it's the second part of the interview that we had with Peachy. Last week, if you didn't hear it, we have the part 1 of Peachy that was last week. So we basically celebrated Christmas, thanks to Peachy, with Peachy. And this week, we start 2024 with Peachy again. And I hope you will have as much fun listening to this that we had fun doing it with him. So, without further ado, have a good painting night.
So I would go back to Warcry. I would go back to Warcry. What are, for you, because also our listeners are probably used to us talking about Warcry, but we talk a lot about a lot of things. Yeah. It's possible that we haven't highlighted the best traits of Warcry. And I think the best person to highlight them would be you.
I mean, I'll try. I do get a bit sort of overly excited and forget all the important words, but I'll try.
It's all good.
So I think initially when it came out, I wasn't that bothered about it at all. I did some stuff for Warmer TV, painted some things. I was like, it's just another skirmish game. Oh, it looks a bit weird. Not into that. And then I was asked to do a live stream bat report. I think it was like a Wednesday or a Thursday. And I was like, I have no idea how to play. And they're like, yeah, but you've got some really cool models. We want to get you on there. And just because the person has dropped out. And I'm like, yeah, okay, I'll come on. And
yeah, but it seems to be a trend. Yeah, but you do have models and we do want that.
On you go. Okay. And I'd not played a single game. And there's a, he doesn't work for the Battle Report team for Warmer Plus anymore, but he's called Bengala, really lovely guy. And he was like, I'll teach you. The first game will be like, you have four models each, and I'll show you. And it could be me teaching you how to play. And I was like, okay. Within the first turn, I understood the rules without question. Exactly. Right. So, first of all, I've never had that with a game system in my life. I was like, I understand what's going off. The cards are very self-describing. It's just icons. You don't need words. I now understand what those icons mean. And I'm like one turn in and I know what I'm doing. This is mad. And I found something very similar with Lord of the Rings, which is why I think Lord of the Rings is still a very good game system. But it took a few more games to embed it. Whereas Warcry was the first ever game, the first turn, I was like, I understand what's going off here. Some people say, oh, it's because it's a really overly simple game and that's not good. I was like, simple is good. If you can make rules so simple that you can pick them up and then not have a game for 4 months and still know the rules.
I know.
This is a good thing.
Yeah, this is a testament to a very good rule system. That is not a negative. That is a huge positive in my books. So I played the first game, really enjoyed it, got excited. And then what I discovered was I now know the rules. So I'm not using my brain space to think about rules. I'm using my brain space to think about narrative and cool impressions and coming up with fun things and then discovering like tactics and stuff like that. So my initial sort of entry to Warcry was nothing but positive and then continued to be nothing but positive. Every game I've ever played has just been laughter, has been madness, has been excitement. And it also generates its own story. So I'm just going to give you a couple of snippets. So my very... So after my first night of playing Warcry on live, I was like, I'm now an expert at playing Warcry.
I know what I'm doing. This is mine now.
Yeah, I am now converted. I should now go off, make a missionary, and teach others to play Warcry.
And then you have the guy that asks you at the beginning, he's like, what have I done?
And this is how
he's running in the office. Yeah. Do you know Warcry? Do you know Warcry? Do you know Warcry?
Yeah. So I went and got my friend Kevin Chin, who was one of the artists for the studio, who now does concepting down in miniatures. So he basically comes up with all the cool sketches for like miniatures. He loves dwarves, and I had the splintered fang at the time. Mm-hmm. And I was like, do you want to play a game? He was like, yeah, I don't know what I'm doing. I was like, don't worry, I do. You'll know what you're doing after one game. It'll be fine. And we played the first game, which is pretty much like, I call it the floor is lava, but you have to like get onto raised areas and you get victory points. He had guns. I didn't. Every time I popped my head up onto a raised area to get victory points.
You were blown away.
Yeah, my head's dissipated. After that game, I think he got 21 victory points and I got one. But it was nothing but laughter. Nothing but laughter. We were in stitches at one point because it was just like one turn. I had like seven of my splintered fang just die.
I was like, oh, what?
Like a more splintered fang edition.
Yeah, it was like,
oh, so it was like walk. Like walk a mole, but like walk a splintered fang.
Yeah,
pretty much. Bang, bang. Or another one.
And Kevin's quite sort of like on the ball with this. If it's like, oh, this warband feels very overpowered. I was like, no, Kevin, this is just one scenario that we pulled from a deck of cards. Trust me, the next scenario, I'm going to murk you because I know how Walker I work. So you're like, yeah, sure.
I know my stuff.
I've only played one game. I know what I'm doing. So the very next game was, he was the defender, I was the attacker. He had to get his dwarfs off the battlefield. He had three battle rounds to do it. And he has small legs. And I just singled out every single one of his little dwarfs and just stabbed him to pieces. And he got one figure off. He didn't get many off at all. And he died. And he was like, ah, so this is Warcry. I was like, yeah, you just don't know what you're going to get. And it was great. And this is the other thing, which I'll probably, I know a long-winded way of getting about, is... You and I'll come to another example in a minute, is you can be the most meta wargamer in the world, but you have to think tactically with Warcry because the hand that you're dealt decides the fate, and you have to be really strategic with your fighter abilities, your universal abilities, and what's in your warband to then deal with those cards that have been dealt out. There is nothing in the world that can prepare you for what's going to happen because you don't know what your deployment's going to be. You don't know what
everything
the twist is
rigged.
Going to be. Exactly. So, like, you know, there's so many people out there that go, oh, yeah, well, I prefer, like, this game because I can, like, look at all the facts and the figures. I can work out the averages and my dice roll. And already before I played, I beat you. I was like, not in Warcry, you're not.
Because I played in a lot of tournaments in the past and I called it, like, winning turn zero. It's like,
yeah.
So don't pick up your stuff from your case. I won.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and that's the point. Sometimes there is no point getting my 750 Imperial Guardsmen out because I'm going to have to put them bowl back in again. So what a waste of time. Life's too short. I'll go back to the bar and have a beer, thanks.
And play Warcry.
Yeah.
So Warcry with a beer and in 40 minutes, I'm going to be laughing and enjoying a second game.
Yes. Before I left, I did a little campaign in the studio. I thought, a bit of a swan song before I go and teach a load of people because I'm now an expert at Warcry because clearly I've done 10,000 hours of this game, so I'm an expert. And I did a little campaign and so many people just didn't know how to play. And within, again, the first couple of turns, they were getting it and they were really enjoying it. And I had plenty of warbands at this point to play with. But one of the editors, a guy called Nick Ermston, he was like, he loves Blood Bowl. Very competitive when it comes to Blood Bowl. And he was like, I've done the meta. I've won Warcry before it's even begun. And I was like, bless you, you've not played it before, have you? And he was like, no, I've got it. I've nailed it. I was like, sure you have. Tell me what you got and I'll tell you why it will go wrong. And my warband is full of vigilers. So these are the Stormcasts with the bows, right? They move five. So they move faster than normal Stormcast. They have one attack dice less in close combat, but they have a shooting attack. They have the same toughness, armor-wise and all that, the same strength. And I'm like, that's pretty good. So they move faster than normal Stormcast. They have one, like, sword attack less, but they've got a bow, which has got ranges and stuff. And you've got five or six of them? He's like, no, only five. I was like, okay. Well, good. I hope you don't get an objective-based one or anything like that. And he was like, what do you mean? I was like, well, you'll find out if you do. And what we got was an objective-based game. straight away. And
let's deal the cards.
Yeah, and the twist card was, it's nighttime. You can't fire anything that's got a range of...
Oh, my God.
And
you
that
just
was always
Warcry.
So He couldn't occupy six objectives because he only had five warriors, and he couldn't use his bows. So I was like, so how are you feeling now? He's like, not confident. I was like, okay.
That's the feeling.
But yeah. The cool thing about this is that you could see it from a more competitive player point of view, which is like, I prepared.
Yeah.
And now I got bamboozled. I got screwed.
Yeah.
But it's also about how you adapt on the playing field will define you as a general, as someone that knows your game and your warband.
Yeah.
Also, lose some, win some. Whatever. And the narrative tells itself.
Yeah.
The knife fight, you get that, and you're like, oh, okay, they were maybe not the best warriors left of what was in the Dawnbringers Crusade to accomplish this mission right now. But right, they are the ones that were there.
Yeah, right now someone's going, did anyone bring a lantern? No.
Oh, you idiot. You were supposed to bring it. No, you were supposed to.
He died in the previous fight because an orc shot an arrow in its face.
Yeah.
Because it was fine.
I've been doing a campaign with my friend Nige. He still works at Workshop as well. I've got loads of friends that still work at Workshop. and he's been using Iron Golem. He had never played first game. Was getting to grips with it, really loves it. I've been painting up his Iron Golem for him as well. And I don't know if you've ever seen a company called Gale Force 9. They do a box called the Tenfold Dungeon. There's loads of it's basically like a dungeon in a box, and it's like a load of the lids are all part of the rooms and the corridors. And I was like, ooh, so we played on Warcry normally. Let's play Warcry in corridors and rooms, see what that feels like. Oh my God, it is brutal. It is so brutal. There's no room for maneuver. You're just like, the death was extreme. But there was one section, and because we've been doing a campaign, we're on the third mission now of our campaign. So I was building up to doing, because I'm using the new rules, I was doing one of the scenarios to recruit something. I wanted to recruit someone, so I was trying to get a hero to join my, so I want a chosen warrior in my, because I like using the Dark Age Savages. Apparently they're the worst warband. I love them, they're great.
They are amazing models.
I
want the whole army of those.
I've literally bought two sets because they are so interchangeable.
I bought two sets of those
and I bought, I think, two or three bucks of the when they came out as a warband.
Yes,
mix stuff.
So I've been using this the Dark Oath, which are amazing. I love them, just the whole vibe. And he's using the Iron Golem, and I've got the Godspeaker, the wizard, right, the lady. Mm-hmm. She has not cast in every game, not just in this campaign. Every game I've ever played, she has failed to do any magic.
Oh no!
Failed to do any useful abilities. So she's now known as the Ungifted because she has no talent at all. And she was at the top of a stairwell, because in the Tenfold Dungeon you get stairs. She was at the top of the stairwell, and she got defeated in combat by one of the Legionnaires, one of the Iron Golem Legionnaires. He just killed her, and then we just laughed, saying, "You just kicked an old lady down the stairs." That's what.
She was useless. Yeah. She was ungifted. Congratulations.
She didn't even have magic power. Yeah. Actually, kick an old lady down the stairs.
Pretty much what he did. And we laughed about this whole narrative of her being kicked down the stairs. And you know what happened when we did the injuries at the end? She had a broken leg because she got kicked down the stairs. And I was like, this stuff writes itself. This is amazing.
Yeah, that's pretty much what is Warcry. Like you said, our brain is just being used to do the puzzle. But at the same time, it's like thinking of what's happening compared to other games that, like it or not, you're thinking about the rules and what am I going to do in my next turn. Now it's just like,
story, just like finding fun anecdotes and like things that happen. And I think that's just testament. Like I've not, before playing, like leaving Workshop and playing my friend Nigel, I've not played for 4 months. And I was like, oh, I'm going to be rusty. And literally the first time I was like, no, I'm not. It's fine. The only time I ever need to look at the book is if I need to remind myself, oh, what's it if I fall? What's the damage if I fall? It's probably going to be
climbing, falling, jumping.
Like 3 inches and I take damage on a dice. Oh, yeah, there we are. It tells me I take damage, certain amounts of damage on a certain dice. Okay, that's fine.
Yeah, but the generic mechanic is super easy.
Absolutely. Sequence. It's such a good system. Yeah. And beautiful. I've never found a game since that I can just remember without using any brain. And that sounds mad, but I don't need to use my brain to play Warcry. I could just turn up and have fun and just, it's just there. It's just like, and Lord of the Rings, even now, I remember most of the mechanics of Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. There's like a few rules here and there, but like the turn sequence, you know, the leapfrogging of like, I've got priority, now it's my turn to do this, now it's your turn to do that. Warcry is just like, it's the individual activations that I really like. Sometimes mm-hmm. when it's like a whole side activated, another whole side, that's speedy from a like an efficiency point of view, but I like the, because it's only what, 8, 9, 10 figures for Warcry.
Yeah,
you've got, it's just so much more tactical. And also like with the abilities, like onslaught, rampage, you know, when rampage. You get the quad, and I think it's changed, I need to check the errata, but at least at the time it was like you get a free move and then get a free attack. And mm-hmm. it's like, it's down to me when I use that. So do I do both my actions first, then do that? Or do I do an action, then do that, then do my final action? Or do I do it first to maximize my three attacks if I want to get in there and do stuff?
There is a tactical side of it. It's just like people think because the rules are simple, there's no tactics to it, but it's not true. Having simple rules makes all the space for decisions.
Yep, all those and narratives. And the other thing... Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, the other thing that I found recent, well, I say recent, in the last 6 months or so.
That's pretty recent.
Yeah, it's recent.
In the hobby world, 6 months is pretty recent.
So, okay, it's one release.
That's true. That's not a bad show. One release. Well, it's workshop, so it's every weekend, isn't it?
yeah, it's more like 36, but
yeah,
it's
yeah,
fine.
Yeah, yeah. There's a guy called Barry, who's one of our patrons. He... was part of a group that made a card generator for Warcry. Mm-hmm. It's called Optimal Game State. So if you ever want to check it out, and it's so well done. So you get like the standard card. You can change the background. So you know the current cards with the orangey, amber mm-hmm. kind of effect. You can have it that, or you can change it to the original, or there's some other things you can use as the backdrops. You can pick out any kind of character card, and then it uploads all the information there. But there's space to put your own photo of your own model in the card.
Yeah.
So I did a load of Sisters of Sigma using mm-hmm. the 40k Kill Team Sisters of the Battle Novitiates. I like Mordheim. I like the idea of Sisters of Sigma, and it makes sense to have them in Age of Sigma. So I wanted to do like this warband of like warrior priestesses that are going out in somewhere in the Varan Spire trying to get like a lot of the Varanite to try, a bit like Weirdstone for Mordheim. They're like hoarding it inside their abbess or abbey. So I was like,
abbey to abbess.
That's either really clever or really uncomfortable. I got my name wrong. All right, but yeah, so I decided, because like Warcry, you get like a card for a build. So if it's like a legionnaire with a hand weapon and shield, there's only one card for that, not one for every pose in the box. So the great thing with this card generator is I can literally do one for every pose I've made. So I've got, and I've named them. So I've named every single model. I've got a photo of every single model. And I've just, at the time, used the Free Guilds rules to do like my normal sisters. For like ones that are a bit more elite, they are using the greatsword rules, so they've got the big hammers. Then like things like, I want a battle wizard or an augur, I think they're called, that I've used the battle wizard. For a sister superior, I've used like the free guild champions and stuff like that. So I could literally use this card generator to make my own characters. And that's the other thing which I really love about Warcry, is you can build a narrative and then just use card and use a generator to like, let's say you really like the idea of like a badass barbarian, but you want them for your goodies. You just go, well, I'm just going to get that Dark Oath guy, use their stats, and then make him like a goodie, and then give him some of the Citizen Sigma symbols. And then, as long as my mates are okay with it, which 9 times out of 10, you're only playing with people that you like. So, of course, they're going to say, yeah, cool. as long as you're paying the points, that's all that matters, right?
Yeah, so, and they're doing the same too. If you inspire them to like this, they can actually do the same thing as you.
Yeah.
And they get to enjoy the liberty, the freedom of, I would like to have my ogre with two-handed weapon, but no heavy armor. And okay, great. So it's not an iron god. It's this. Yeah. We take out the armor. All good.
I know the viewers can't see it right now, but I'm really jealous, Kevin, that I'm seeing snow falling in the
world. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Why do you have snow and I don't have snow?
They both live in Montreal, so they are more in the city and it's a bit warmer, I guess, so snow is not there yet. Yeah, but okay. I live in Mascouche, which is a bit more village side of the Quebec. It's more rural.
So, 25 minutes, so I hope I get that snow.
Yay!
I love talking snow. talking about snow, weird segue, because Phil loves snow, so everything that he's done has snow or granite.
He has snow.
And we did, we love Warcry, of course, but we love Horus Heresy, we love Warhammer 40k, and the new edition of 40k kind of left us
I've not played
fine.
It. Not played it.
And yeah, we like to play smaller games, so
so what we did is Phil suggested, hey Kev, what do you think about using the rules of Warcry, but we play Horus Heresy or 40k, we take our Space Marines and we find the war scroll that fits the best.
We just change the picture in the card, and in place of putting runes, we put 40k runes, and we're playing.
Yeah.
What did you call it, David? 40 cry?
40 cry.
40 cry.
I mean, and then me and Kevin started to play it like a Space Marine would be Stormcast, and he played like Chaos was like Slave to Darkness. And then after one turn, we're like, this is so great. I'm using my bolter in a game of Warcry, and then we're fighting for objectives.
Honestly, the system is so adaptable that I think, because I've been looking at using like that for Napoleonics as well, for like doing skirmish
games.
That card generator.
People that are just listening right now, we're talking with video, and David just made the face of someone that ate something very spicy.
But enjoyable.
Enjoyable spicy.
Yeah. Enjoyable spicy. But yeah, I mean, because you've got the card generator, you could literally go, I'm going to put a picture of a rifleman, a picture of a red coat, and I call it a rifleman. I'm going to call it a line infantry or light infantry. And then with Warcry, obviously, you've just got to find because it has all the icons. So you can, when you do have your weapons, you can just find the icon that works. And because you've got some guys with handguns, some folks with swords, some folks maybe a pioneer with an axe, you just put that there instead. You get that icon and you put that in place, and then that is your weapon, because then you go, well, that looks like a musket, and these guys have got muskets. And you might have to like make your own for like 40k, like do like find some images of bolters and like chainswords and then add them into the file, because you can do that as well. It allows you to add things in like icons and stuff into the files, so you can make your own.
Can you send us
I'll tell you what, I'm gonna go on to the old Tinterwebs right now, and then I'll send you a link in the chat.
Yes. Woo-hoo.
But yeah, it's that game, because we were, like you said, the game system is so simple. After a while, our brain was like, how can I use that to take that fun with other miniatures? And then you realize it's so simple, you can just swap it out. No need to do any like rule conversion or. It's really a good system.
And also as painters, like we lost Peachy.
He switched.
Technology.
I accidentally clicked the wrong general. I clicked the wrong general. I'm so sorry. It's because it's all in French and I can't speak it.
That's amazing.
Click the wrong one. He's just gone. Peachy's just gone. He's gone. He's
back. That's what I was saying. Like, oh, we lost Peachy. Oh, he's back.
It's because I saw the word general and I didn't really I wasn't paying attention because I'm an idiot. That's the only way to describe it.
It ADHD. it's not idiot, it's ADHD, but it's they're used. I'm the same, so they're used to me, so they are fine. I'm the test dummy for every interview usually, so when they get used to me, they're used to everyone.
I get a few people have observe that with me, like, I think you have ADHD, Peach. I'm like, do I? Like, yeah, I think you do. I'm like, okay.
It's a beautiful thing. it's a beautiful thing to have it.
It is.
As I was saying with painting, when you play Warcry, when you're a painter that paints a lot of armies, like you said a bit before, you painted like 2,000 points of armies. And then after that, there's a bit of fatigue. And when you play your game, if your game is not satisfactory, it's kind of, I just did all this. And okay, it's not what I wanted. And the reward doesn't fit the effort. And that can be a real bummer. Phil is a guy that paints slowly. I paint really fast. Warcry is perfect. I can do 4 warbands. You can do 1. Everyone is respected. The pace of everyone is respected. We all enjoy it.
I'm trying to like put it into words. Like for me, it's such a unique thing now, because before I'd put so much effort into, like you say, the armies and stuff, and then the reward after would be like, oh, after all this, you know, it could be like 6 months for a build up to play a 2-hour game. Whereas Warcry, absolutely. I'm like putting the same amount of effort in a year for like painting things, but I've now scratched so many more itches. I'm like, I've done this warband, I've always wanted to, I've never got around to doing an orc army for myself because I've done so much for Workshop and I never really enjoyed painting green skin, but I really like the new Ard Boys and like the Iron Jaws. And like, I only need a handful. And I really like the models and I really like the background of them. So there's no excuse for me not to do these guys because they're so cool looking. And actually, I'll just get one of each. Like, take the Bliss Barb Archers. I love the look of the Bliss Barb Archers, but painting one of those is a chore. So if I only need to do one.
Them. Assembling them is also a chore.
Get me started on that separate finger. And that
the
separate
fingers.
Thumb. Why that? I mean, I've had this. I had this whinge when I was at Workshop to the miniatures manager because he was like saying, "How can we, make a more efficient kit system than the other?" I'm like, "Don't put separate fingers and thumbs on a sprue. If you've done it for the other 9 archers, why have you done it separate for this one? Oh, because it looked cool. I don't care about cool. I lost that finger and thumb. It's gone. It's somewhere in the carpet. So I've got an archer now who can't fire his bow because he looks stupid.
So he's he's the thumbless."
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing, right? It's like it's like because the forefinger's extended out and the thumb's upwards. It's almost like he's let go of the bowstring. Whereas others kind of have that, but they're a bit more bent and like, you know, just like more casually held. It's like, just do more of that. Why do you have to do this one particular pose, which was a separate part and now gone somewhere on the
floor? The guy's just making noises.
Yeah.
And the guy's like, what's he doing? Don't mind him.
See, you have the lady over there, the ungifted with a broken leg.
Yeah.
You have the thumbless, which just makes noises.
Hey, welcome to the warband. We're great.
He's got a one-stringed harp. That's what we call it. Just a one-stringed harp. He has fun. We'll just leave him in the corner. He has fun.
At the same time, you have the most inclusive Slave to Darkness army ever seen.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, everything.
Everything is in there.
I've got Ogroids. I've got Wizards. I've got like barely scantily clad warriors and then warriors in armor. It's a bit of everything.
And an old lady.
Got a broken hip, a broken leg, and an eye. So it's not going well for her. That's why she's probably ungifted, I think. Maybe. Can't read.
We've talked about how Warcry is different from other games. It's simple and things like that. And I'm really curious because when it got out, it felt really different. So my mind was trying to fill the void, explain why it's different. And I was thinking maybe it's because there's new people in the design studio. Is it a new generation of designers that did it?
So there's two. There's I will forever be indebted to. So Sam Pearson pretty much made the mechanic, I think. Jervis Johnson was part of the team as well. So Jervis Johnson was very keen on like narrative, and I think with Jervis leaving, I'm a little bit worried for the future of narrative, if I'm honest, because he was the only sensible room in the voice about narrative wargaming, because it's like, And, you know, it swings and roundabouts, you know, Workshop's been like that for years. Like, it'll have, like, a period of this, and then someone else takes over and has a period of that, and then another leader takes over. And
currently, it cycles.
Yeah, and the management at the moment, certainly in, like, the Books and Box games, are all tournament players that like match play. And so a lot of the rules reflect that. I've never agreed with that. And when I was in the Army Painting team, I was very much narrative-based. And I think I was the only manager in that room that cared about narrative. Luckily, I had a strong ally, which was Jervis Johnson, who also cared.
Jervis is a pretty good ally to have.
He's been there longer, and he had more weight than me, so we could both like make sure that gets put in there. So
let's bend together.
I'll hopefully get him on the channel at some point as well, is our goal. He's got reasons for not coming on at the moment, but we talked a few times. I've seen him many times, and he's such a lovely guy. I really like Jervis. But yeah, he was there to make sure like it was about narrative. It was about having fun telling the story. And then Sam, I think, was part of like, because he was quite new, Sam Pearson. I'm not sure if it was all his work with the game mechanic or if Jervis was part of that, because Jervis is like created Blood Bowl. He knows about making great games. So I don't want to like take anything away from Jervis and also not take anything away from Sam. But certainly the two of them made Warcry what it is. And then
it is a good reflection of both.
And not to put fear or like, you know, get like the pitchforks going, but those two no longer contribute towards Warcry. So I've always been a bit like, oh, I hope people carry that flame and make it still, you know, following the ethos of what was there. So
the spirit of what it was.
Yes. Yeah. So yes, there are a lot of new people that are bringing fresh, and I think that's great. So there were a couple of writers, I'm not going to name them, if they ever listen to this, they know who they are. They don't believe in playing anything that's not Games Workshop, so they can't expand their field of knowledge, where a lot of the newer writers that have come in, games developers and stuff like that, have played so many other games that they see so many different mechanics. And they're like, well, this works in that game and this works in that game. I might like try and do something similar to that. James Hewitt, he was a guest on the show. He was very much like that. He came up with Gore Chosen, which is such a fun game if you ever played Chosen. And even when you've died, you get to do stuff, which is like such a simple thing that like in war games, because you're just there going, oh, I guess because all my stuff's dead now, I'm making the teas and like getting the refreshments, Emma. Is that my job now?
I'm going to go get the chicken.
Yeah,
it's fine. Wait for me, guys. Have fun,
enjoy it. I'll be back in 20 minutes or whatever. so that was good. And he did Silver Tower, he did Betrayal at Kalth, he did lots of like board games and stuff, and he brought a lot of great mechanics into that.
Yeah,
and Sam was the same. David Sanders, he's done some stuff with Warcry recently.
Yeah,
Dave Sanders, he did Underworlds. That was his brainchild. So I don't really like Underworlds that much from a competitive point of view. I'm not very good at it, but I love the models. I like the concept of it, but just getting or like Warcry. Cool little. I mean, that's it.
Underworld models, great. Yeah. Warcry.
But whoever it was on that Toma Champions 2021 that went, oh, I'm doing something called Bladeborne or Bloodborne or whatever it was, which is like, here's all the Underworlds warbands that you can use in Warcry. Genius. I mean, I've got the Sepulchral Guard and the Crimson Corp, which I still find bizarre, together dropping one or two petitioners, which are the Skeleton Warriors. That's 1,000 points. I've got 4 vampires in 1,000 points.
I know.
And a whole bunch of skeletons. I don't get this. I really like that side of it. Just like, you know, cross blending like two game systems to use, because the Underworlds models are just so beautiful. And it, like I say, it scratches itches like the Skaith's Wild Hunt, like, oh, weird fawns for Citizen Sigma and Sylvaneth. I like this. I've got Mr. Tumnus. I can now have Mr. Tumnus in my in my Warcry games with a horn. This is great.
It's really interesting what you were saying about, you know, people experiencing other game before designing games through Game Workshop.
Yes, because
I remember when Warcry was out and I checked the rule and I was like, oh, there's something similar to Saga.
Yes, yeah.
We had Julie, which is a writer for Studio Toma who does Saga, and we talked to her about that, and she said, I'm not sure it comes from Saga, but it's something that exists in other war games that we were inspired by. So it's super impressive.
I know Jervis is a fan of Saga, so that makes sense.
Oh, nice.
You just made David's day even more.
I mean, he does a lot of stuff. I mean, he's come up with a lot of things, and like a great example, like Jervis's brain, is that years ago, and it was such a privileged position to be in. I was asked, and Duncan was as well, to play a war game at the Perrys. So the two Perry twins. I think Rick Priestley was there, Jervis Johnson, and Dave Andrews, who I'm good friends with as well. He's got such an amazing game space. I love Dave Andrews. He comes up with great games. But Jervis had got like an old board game, which was like a campaign system for the Hundred Days War. Of when Napoleon returns.
I like that you added the last sentence just to make sure that me and Phil can pull up.
Yes,
it's a Napoleonic. Okay, we're good.
Yeah,
we're good.
I'm sorry, 100 days campaign is technically called. I don't know why I said war, but you know what I mean.
It's all good. David talks about it all the time. We just mess with them that we don't remember. We call it trauma.
It was the inspiration for the 40K universe where there is only war. It comes from there is only in one war, the 100 years war.
Yes.
It's the same.
Because there's the 100 years war and there's the 100 days campaign. Sorry, 100 days campaign. So I was getting my two mixed up there. But yeah, so he had this rule set and he literally was like, every single block was a representation of a brigade or a corps that was on in the campaign. And the Perrys have got so much stuff painted that everything that was on that block, they had like, this is this corps, this is this corps, this is this corps.
Whoa.
So when you use your blocks on the campaign map, it was representative of what was in these different collections. And so whatever went where was like, all right, so we got corps number 2 and 5 and 3. So let's go down to the gaming room. That's this load of soldiers. That's this load of soldiers.
Wow.
We're talking about thousands of miniatures, right?
Thousands and thousands. They've got so many because they've done so much over the years and some of the like all different companies worth their own stuff.
Yeah.
But it was just so much fun. And we'd turned up a bit late because they'd done 2 days of it. So we turned up on the second day. So it'd been a couple of days fighting already. And then there was a bit where I had to turn up and I was in charge of the right flank and I may have failed a little bit.
Is it failure or treachery?
Definitely not treachery. I was using British and Brunswickers, which are my favourites. I love the Brunswicker stuff. I know it's like it sounds really dope. It's like greys and blacks with like sky blue facings and colours and cuffs, but there's a whole story about the Duke of Brunswick, which his satellite nation of Brunswick was obviously oppressed by Napoleon, and he had allies in the British army and like the Austrians kind of helped a bit, but there was a particular, I forget the faction or the nation. It was again because at that time Germany was just split up into loads of little principalities and like baronies and stuff, but there's like these gendarmes of like a particular German faction that he just hated with a passion.
Hating with a passion is something people do sometimes.
Yes. Yeah. And he wanted to make sure he got to, because the Austrians couldn't help him, so he was basically just fighting to the sea to get to like Britain and continue fighting against Napoleon in some capacity. And to visualize his hatred, and it's in one of the Osprey books, so this is just like stuff you can read, to visualize his hatred of Napoleon, he made sure all his uniforms were black with skull and crossbones on the hats.
Yeah.
Just like, okay, this guy's like, yeah. I hate the French so much, I'm gonna, or not even the French, Napoleon, so
you.
Much, I'm gonna put skull and crossbone on, and we're not talking Waffen SS skull and crossbone, we're talking like pirate style. And they had like horsehair and stuff like that, but he sounded like such a character. But he dies at the battle before Waterloo called Quatre Bras, because he's got lots of new recruits mingled in there with some veterans, but he's just walking in front of the line with his pipe, just inspiring the troops like, don't worry chaps, it'll be fine, and then gets shot in the leg. And he dies and bleeds out, and like, oh well, I mean, that looked good on paper, but you got hit by a musket ball by a voltigeur and now you're dead.
That's a lot of dedication for painting skulls on hats and then playing a horn. The guy was a musician. He was a bard in Dungeons & Dragons. That guy knows how to inspire his troops, but there's a reason why bards are never in the front.
Yes, yeah.
Bards are never there. It's from that guy.
Just wanted to say hi to John in Montreal. He's a fan of the Black Brunswickers.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Brunswickers, yeah.
And
because they
them.
Fought in the... Yeah. I mean, I use them in Napoleonic Peninsula War stuff because I didn't realize this at first that they were there as well.
Oh.
Because they're called the Black Horde. And Wellington's like, well, I want to use these, and he just like mingles them with like the rifle corps. So like certain divisions had like lots of light infantry and riflemen, and they were known as the Brunswicker, I want to say Owls, but it's O-E-L. But I think they say it's pronounced Owls. And yeah, there was a few of those scattered in the war in Spain. So if you want to do them in the Waterloo or Spain, you've got choices. But yeah, nice. They are awesome, the Black Brunswickers. So yeah, yeah, good shout out. Another fan. Yay.
Yeah.
We have the cool thing about the podcast is that we reached out a lot of people, and like we don't, I don't know how to say it without sounding bad, but I'm going to say it anyway. We don't pose. We don't fake. If there's something that we don't like personally, not necessarily like in a mean way, but we don't try and mask and, oh, yeah, I love it too. And
yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we have our love. We have our passions. And yeah. People that listen to the podcast know each of us in yes. what we do yeah. like.
Yeah,
and we organize events that that reflects that. So yeah. David has a club of historical wargamers that join together and organize events each other month, kind of. And they organize demos, they organize games, so people can come if they don't have figurines, they can come and try it anyway. We have the painting nights, and like last year in Halloween. So not the Halloween that we just passed, the one before.
Yeah, yeah.
You were on Twitch, still with Games Workshop at one point when I created the event of Warcry Halloween.
Oh.
And I got inspired listening to you, like you say, you ramble on about Warcry.
What?
I was very excited, and I came to the guys and was like, guys, I have a huge amount of undead. Like night haunts, vampires, zombies, skeletons, everything in between. And Curse City was coming out.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I was like, guys, I want to do a Warcry event where people will come with only Underworld Warbands. You buy an Underworld Warbands, and that's what you're using.
Yeah, yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
And you don't know the game? I don't mind. I will give you demos before. Yeah. And if you still come to that event and you don't know, I'll coach you. You'll be fine. And the idea was that people had to run around the table with their warbands, fight each other, of course,
yeah, yeah.
But search for a key to try and leave the catacombs, like the cemetery.
Yeah, yeah.
So they had to find that key, and they had to roll a dice in every crypt that they had on the table. And depending on the result, either you found the key, and then your fighter has the key until he dies, and then the other person can go and pick it up.
Or you find a friend.
Yeah, or you awaken something, and then they had to roll. I think it was a D66.
Yeah.
So oh, I had God. A table.
Painted, yeah, Kevin had painted like a lot.
That's a lot of undead.
I painted so many undead.
Is our equivalent of the Perry.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
When we had projects at the store and we had to paint a lot of guys, Ben, the manager that is still there, hi Ben, would tell me, and I didn't know you back then, but he has known you from the times that he would go over there sometimes with managers and he heard about you and what you were doing. It was before you appeared on YouTube doing some videos.
Yeah.
And he kept telling me, Kevin, you're like the peachy of the store. Like you paint so quick and it looks good. And at the time I was like, okay, cool. I guess that peachy guy is nice. I hope.
He's not.
No. But then I saw how you did Morathi in your first video with your thumb.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The old thumbing.
Oh. And that blew my mind. I looked at my girlfriend at the time and I was like, okay, so that guy on the video does this, and I have no idea if it's going to work. Yeah. And she's like, but why are you doing it if you have no idea it's going to work? That Morathi model is a great detail model, and it's expensive. Yeah. I trust in the technique. It's fine. And it's one of the most beautiful models I've done, and it took me half the time that I would take, like on Nagash or other models.
Yeah, yeah.
And that flipped a switch, and I used that for my undead because I was like, okay, I have 2 months. I have to paint 66 units of undead that people can summon. And I have to have enough of them that every table, if they get skeleton, it's a D6 skeleton that appears. So if we have, and we had 8 tables of Warcry. So we had 16 people playing all day.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Blooming
out. Yeah. And so it was not a tournament. It was just... you play a game, you have your own story of your own warband, and it's your own Bladeborn, and we had like a little armies on parade kind of thing.
Amazing.
The people loved it so much that they were like, so when is the next one? And I was like,
yeah.
I'm sorry. I didn't plan for a next one.
it took your own success.
Yeah, I was like, it took everything out of me to make this for the D66. I need a break.
Yeah. That's amazing. Oh, that's a really good idea, though. I really like that. Like, just like, you know, something simple, not lots to worry about. What, 4 figures at most with most warbands? Yeah. And then having that Halloween element of like, oh, I'm searching for a key. Oh, no, I found a really angry ghost. Oh, no.
And the cool thing is that I had like the odd zombie dragon in there.
Oh, wow. How is that hiding in a crypt?
I know. And the peoples were like, getting a dragon. I hope I'm not getting a dragon. Okay, it's not a dragon. But one got a dragon. And when they got a dragon, basically every time that someone was throwing dice, I asked everyone to make a little sound. So all the games stopped to see what was the summon.
Yeah.
So, and when he got the dragon, I was like, okay. So, as you understand so far, every creature that was summoned is not controlled by anyone. They charge the closest and they go against the closest. When it's a little band of 5 skeletons, it's easy to deal with.
Yeah.
When it's a zombie dragon, it's completely different.
Yeah.
So I made sure that both players understood that zombie dragon can ruin your life right now. None of you are going to find a key because that zombie dragon has to go down.
Yeah, yeah.
My suggestion, both of you go against the dragon as quick as possible.
Yeah, then duke it out amongst yourselves after.
Exactly. And I was afraid that people might, you know, I'm not going in, I'm not too sure. I will let you deal because he's closest to you. And people were so like-minded that they all went in. They all went in against the dragon. They killed it like in one turn. They were going bananas at it. But after that, they duked it out. And at the end, we asked, like, what was your most favorite moment? Like, we hand out prizes at the end, and we're just like, what's your favorite moment? And they were like, having an ally to go against that dragon really made me feel better.
Yeah, I bet. That's really cool. Yeah, because we did some stuff on Life of the Pit fight, and that's a bit like that, because you get the monsters come out, and then it's really like, do we all fight on our own selves? Because in the pit fight, you might have, like, 1 to 3 models in that, and we're all against each other. It's a good sort of like 4-way sort of game system. But yeah, working together to take down something big. The game I had at the weekend, most of them from Games Workshop Derby when I used to work there. Uh-huh. In fact, all of them were, apart from Duncan. He couldn't make it, which was a shame. He cancelled last minute because he had things to do. We played 2 games. The first game was, there's 3. What I've basically done is... I've got them to get their warbands, and they split their warbands into a shield, a dagger, and a hammer. However, the shield goes on one map, the dagger goes on one map, and the hammer goes on one map. So they have to decide which map is going, well, which room or which area they're going to go
to. That's cool.
So they all decide which one was going where, so they did that. And then depending what survives will be what's there at the end. We never got around to finishing the game, but what was really funny was one of the games, there was a load of like Sisters of Sigma, because they found like an old Sigmarite outpost, and it was full of Sisters of Sigma. At no point did I say they have to fight each other, but they carried on hitting each other, and there's all these Sisters of Sigma at the end. I'm like, are you not going to join forces and fight these folks? It's like, no, we're just going to kill each other first. I'm like,
okay.
Cool. And then one of them was like, oh yeah, we could like work together as a team. And they were like, no, I'm not going to smash in the face. Okay, all right. Cool. All right.
This common is goals. This is common goals.
Common goals. Yeah. Talking about the Marathi thing, you just reminded me. As always, the way with like doing video, the test model came out perfect. And I found like using my thumb to like wipe paint. It's better than tissue and sponge because they soak up too much. And I've just found it's just like the perfect, like the eye of the storm of like just being able to like get the right amount of paint removed. That gives a bit of a blend, which is why I did that, because I was like, it's all grey with like red in the recesses, because I was looking at the box art stuff and I was like, how do I do that? And then I was like, oh, I'll just put some red in the recesses and wipe it with my thumb, that'll work. But yeah, the video version came out worse, and I wasn't as happy with the video as in comparison to the test model. So I always look back at that going, oh, that's not as good as it could have been. And it's just because when I'm at home and I'm doing that and I'm here and I'm in my comfort zone, it's easier. When you've got like,
you know, like the camera and the light camera and stuff.
And I was in a right-handed setup, so I was doing that, and I'm like, because the camera's there, and I'm like, oh, come on. So it was a bit harder to sometimes, your tests always look better than the film stuff. Oh, what is that noise?
That's my compressor of my AirPods. Oh!
that's how Phil talks about paint. Like he starts the compressor, and then it's like, oh, I have a need to paint. I'm sorry.
Gotta go.
But I know you were very generous. Like, you spent almost 2 hours with us. And I know you have something. Would you be interested coming back?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. I've had a blast.
That's great. We had so many things that we wanted to talk to you about. And honestly, of all the lists, I knew we would ramble. I knew we would talk. I'm a talker. You're a talker.
Yeah.
David has a beard. I knew we were not going to get through all of it. But we're very generous. We had a lot of fun with you. So thank you so much.
Fantastic. No, thank you for having me. Next time, more War Cry, more Napoleonics, right?
Oh, yes. We had a lot more War Cry and a lot more sharp questions.
Good. What I'm here for.
So two last things. Guys, is it okay, David and Phil, if I ask it?
Yeah.
Okay. Sure. One thing. One trick that you would like to give to people. We have people that listen to the podcast that are new in the hobby, that just got in, that we just introduced. Do you have any one trick that you're like, you know what, this is a good start?
I've got so many, I think the one I've been using a lot is, if you've seen sponge chipping, a lot of people have been using sponge chipping for like doing battle damage on tanks and stuff. Mm-hmm. It's something I've stolen from Darren Latham because it's genius. As opposed to getting a big block of sponge and then like dabbing that into the paint and applying it like you would a dry brush, is to rip a bit off and use the, I don't know if you've seen he's done like a little Instagram reel where he does this. So if anyone watching this, go and check out Darren Latham's Instagram reel. He gets the paintbrush sleeves and he just squeezes a bit of the sponge into the actual sleeve. It becomes like your own little paintbrush of a sponge. So you don't have to have that this massive chunky thing that it's like all over the place.
Yes.
But also you get different size paint sleeves. So you can have different size sponges. And then you can just like have a bit more accuracy. And I've done cloaks and I did a video on the Shatterpoint set where I use sponge chipping to do like an effect on Sarge Ventress's cloak.
Yeah.
They have like this weird dapple effect on the cloak. And I was like, I ain't doing that. What's a quick way of doing it? Sponge. Sponge it. And I've done that with cloaks and all sorts. So yeah, that'll be follow.
Yeah, I use my old paintbrush that are really dead. Like I use them and glue sponges and stuff on it, but
that's what people do. I did that, glue sponges to it, but you just get a sleeve and just like, because you can just then pull it out and then just like turn it around and go back in again. I would demonstrate it here, but none of the viewers will see it.
Yeah, nobody would see it.
If you go to Darren Laven's page, there's a little reel where he does it, and it's so obvious now when I look back. I'm like, yeah, smart man.
I can see it in the eyes of Kevin. Like, he's like, oh.
I love it. Every trick that I can find to make shortcuts and make it more efficient and still look good is what I go for.
Yeah.
That's so great. Maybe another Warcry Halloween thanks to you. Now I have more tricks.
More tricks up your sleeve.
The other thing that we have, usually when we finish the episodes, we ask the guests to say bonne soirée peinture with us.
Okay, say that again. Say that again.
Exactly. And what we realized is that when we ask it to people that speak English, it sounds different. It does. We put you on the spot, sadly. So
that's fine. I like being put on the spot. Say each word separately so I can at least try and work out in my brain how to say it.
Okay. So just to explain to you how we go about it is that one after another, we are going to say bonne soirée peinture.
Right.
So, and no stress, it comes out however it comes out. We did the same thing with Duncan.
Yeah, yeah.
And because we talked a bit about the fact that he speaks French in some words because of reenactments.
I don't. I failed it at GCSE. I can probably get away with asking for a cup of tea if I really need to.
I would say that's pretty good. We have a lot of Montrealers that don't even know how to ask.
You need a tea? Just make a tea symbol. That's how I do
Beautiful. So yeah, so we finished the episode by saying bonne soirée peinture. You're going to be the one closing it.
Okay, so amazing.
So it's the name of the podcast.
Yeah.
And you're basically saying, like, have a good painting night.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Awesome. I can do that.
So it's been all. It's been great. People, if you want to find Peachy, you have an Instagram, right?
I do. Peachy Tips is the Instagram, and the Painting Phase is the YouTube channel. So, yes.
And they can find it on Spotify, too.
Spotify, yep, we and Apple Play as well.
Yeah,
got it on all the weird and wonderful podcasts.
So, and episodes go out regularly, right?
Yeah, every Monday we try and have a chat show, and if we can, every week I try and get a paint video out. But sometimes the editing takes longer. But usually, like Mondays and Fridays tend to be the videos. That's the plan. But yeah, definitely Mondays. Every Monday is a chat show.
That's how I do my first car ride of the day when I go to work, is painting phase during traffic, and then I get to work. So I'm all good.
And we probably speak too fast, and no one understands what Jeff says because he speaks way too fast being from Liverpool.
I got used to it.
Yeah.
So there's only one thing to say now that we're done with the episode. Thank you, Peachy. Thank you so much.
Thank you
for
having me.
Our pleasure. So, David?
Bonne soirée peinture.
Phil?
Bonne soirée peinture.
Bonne soirée peinture. Peachy?
Of course. Bonne soirée peinture.
Ah, that was beautiful. Yes.
Best one so far.
I think so.
So that other people. Oh.
Had to speak Mandarin for a video, and I had no concept of if I was enunciating it right. So I could have been saying, "Welcome to this paint video." I had no idea. I just got words, and I had to say, and I was like, "Oh, good luck."
Sorry and did you ask anyone?
I had a translator lady called Yaren, and she was talking me through it. And I was like, trying to sound like her, and I was like, "Was that right?" She's like, "It will do."
But
if anything,
for us,
you did great. Yeah. We'll invite you back.
Fantastic. Oh, brilliant. Yeah. All right.
And by the way, great shirt. I think it's a Chaos Star.
Love the Christmas shirt.
It is.
It's a Horus one.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. Best one. I've got a sister battle one somewhere upstairs.
Au revoir. Yeah. Oh, that's good. Au revoir.